It is remarkable how much priests and religious are in television screenplays now. In every case, the priesthood and the religious life that I have seen is dragged in the mud. Certainly, no ordinary dedication to the priesthood or a life of the councils can survive the studied onslaught of those whose behavior betrays what real dedication means, and of those who control the mind-forming media of our society. That's part two, part three, unity but not uniformity. There is, consequently, need for extraordinary virtue to keep alive the practice of Christian virtue in secularized cultures in Euro-America. The need is not only for personal endurance to withstand the subtle and overt pressures to conformity that oppress the conscientious Catholic like a fetid atmosphere. The need is also because a society cannot reform itself without reformers. Do you hear that? Whose reformation is mainly effected by their constancy in the face of trial. Let me change the accent. Whose reformation, that is, of society, is mainly effected by their, the reformers, mainly by their constancy in the face of trial. And who influence their fellow men to conversion mainly by the graces they merit before God through their heroic attachment to the will of God. That's a large statement. Now, the principal source of grace for our fellow Christians is our own constancy in doing the will of God, because a crisis of the present magnitude cannot possibly be resolved without supernatural means, those accessible only through prayer and sacrifice. But having said that, there is one more feature of holiness in our day that deserves careful scrutiny. It is the question of what kind of holiness this means. The question is highly practical, because many people, especially the laity, about whose sanctity we should be mightily concerned, are wondering where all of this leads. Most of the books on the spiritual life which they read are evidently written for persons in the priesthood or the cloister. So they are confused, because it seems they feel that to grow in holiness, one must separate himself and live apart from the noise and crowd of the world. Believe me, many of the laity envy those who can live apart from the noise and crowd of the world. At the same time, priests and religious are confused, because a growing literature is accumulating which says that the asceticism of former days was either all wrong or it is out of date today. The asceticism of the ancients, say up to the Second Vatican Council, for some people that's ancient, stressed interiority, recollection of heart, mastery of one's passions, humility and docility of spirit, and much prayer in the form of meditations and pious aspirations throughout the day. But nowadays, priests and religious are told all of these former things have passed away. Today's spirituality should not be so much concerned with the worship of God as with the social and political needs of man. It should be directed to humanization rather than divinization. Its focus ought to be on improving man's lot on earth, rather than preparing for man's destiny after death. The issues that this shift in spirituality implies are too broad and wide-ranging to do any more than advert to them here. What should be made clear, however, is that in spite of all the fanfare, there has not been any drastic revolution in the pursuit of holiness in our day. All the essentials of the sanctifying process, that's what becoming holy means, sanctifying process, that were valid in the days of St. Paul or Augustine or Aquinas or Margaret Mary or Teresa of Lisieux, are still valid today. I have found a neat term to describe this new spirituality. I call it instant mysticism. No, you don't become a Saint John of the Cross by reading a book. What are we saying? We do not deny that there have been developments in the science of the saints, but these developments are not drastic, and still less are they revolutionary, as some radical theologians or commentators would lead us to believe. The revolution is mainly in the imagination, which, by the way, is the worst place to have a revolution. And in the light of the Church's ageless wisdom, is largely illusory. Let us be clear about fundamentals. No one is saying that the pursuit of holiness by a workman in the factory is identical with that of a priest in the rectory, nor that growth in Christian perfection is to be sought in exactly the same way by a salesgirl and a cloistered nun. And one of the errors, not to say tragedies, of our day is the idea that it makes no difference. It does. And the sooner some people learn the facts of life in this matter, the better for the church, and within the church, for all levels of the faithful. You have your means of sanctity. The single women to whom I gave a weekend seminar, all professionals, including the editor of the American Medical Association Journal, Dr. Teresa Southgate. You have your means of sanctity, they have theirs. While saying this, however, we dare not conclude that because there are different states of life, in all of which a person can become holy, do we hear it? Therefore, each state of life is a closed system. Therefore, the basic, and I want to stress basic, means of becoming more God-like by becoming more Christ-like are radically different. They cannot be, right? It is the same God whom we worship and the same Jesus we imitate. In spite of their bewildering variety and the great differences that obtain, say, between the responsibilities of marriage and the duties of religious life, all who strive after holiness must use certain means offered them by the church. Otherwise, what began as a strong desire will end up in disillusion and failure. It is not our business at this point to go into great detail. Yet, we cannot omit mentioning some of these indispensable means of holiness, which in greater or less measure are available to every sincere Catholic if he but takes the time and effort to discover them. Let me mention just four, which everyone who seeks to become holy must follow, otherwise he won't become holy. Let me first identify them and then just a brief word of commentary. State of life, the Eucharist, personal prayer, and regular self-evaluation. First, each person now finds himself or herself. I was never so conscious of bringing both genders into my conferences until lately. Each person now finds himself or herself in a particular state of life. Faith assures us this is not the result of chance. It is part, and I would say the indispensable part, of God's providence in our regard. We are Christians who do not believe in reincarnation. We believe we have only one life in this world, and after death comes judgment and the decision of our particular final destiny. It is God's will, then, that we work out our salvation and our sanctification within the framework of the state of life to which we should quietly believe we have been called. There are some people who until their dying breath are wondering whether they are in the right state of life. By that time, it's too late. All they can enter is a state of death. No casual observation. Relax. It is in this context and no other that God wants us to serve Him, not just faithfully, but very faithfully. If we do, we shall become holy. If we search elsewhere, and this is the sword point of what I am going to say, if we try to straddle the states of life, we shall hopefully save our souls. We shall not achieve sanctity. All who became holy recognized that the state of life in which they were was the one to which God had called them. And they went about the business of becoming holy in that state of life. That's number one. Two, the Eucharist is for all of us, and not only for priests and nuns. In fact, unless priests and religious are devoted to the Eucharist as Mass, Holy Communion, and Real Presence, they will lose their hold on virtue, and so far from becoming holy, they will even lose their Catholic faith. The Eucharist is indispensable for everyone. It is Christ in the Eucharist who should be the unqualified center of our spiritual life, from whom and through whom we become more like Him. Therefore, apart from the Eucharist, sanctity can be aspired to. It will never be achieved. Sanctity is either Eucharistic or it is not sanctity. Third, personal prayer. By this I mean easy conversation with God during the day. It is as necessary for holiness as the air we breathe is necessary to sustain life. This is not as difficult or exotic as may seem. The secret, and no matter whom I'm speaking to, I tell them the same thing. The secret is to put our minds to it, literally. Once we decide that we shall regularly and frequently have God on our minds, we will share with Him those myriad thoughts that most people are prone to discuss only with their own dear selves. Out of intimate conversation with God will grow intimate friendship with God. Doesn't this make sense? Which is practically a definition of sanctity. The key is to really want to do so. Finally, if we want to grow in virtue, we must daily, at least once a day. How often do you have examines of conscience? Once a day. Well, then I'm safe. We have it, but we're going through a terrific turmoil in the Society of Jesus. Our rules still require twice daily examination. Each time. And sometimes I'm sleepy when I'm doing it, as last night. But I made it. If we want to grow in virtue, we must daily, at least once a day, stop to look at ourselves and take stock of ourselves. Call it examination of conscience. Call it spiritual inventory. Call it moral self-appraisal. Names do not matter. Nor is the length of time spent in this important interior reflection so important. What is crucial is that we are convinced this should be done and really do it. How strange that every respectable business establishment, from the national corporation to the local grocery store, assumes the need for keeping records, making a daily account of, say, sales and amount of income. Yet some of us, I know I'm speaking to the wrong audience when I say this, some of us believe that the most important business in life, which is the pursuit of God's will and growth in the likeness of His Son, can succeed without planning or management, and by some miracle can actually thrive on being haphazard and exposed to every whim of chance. We must live an orderly life, and take my word for it, this order is not only outside of us, it is especially inside of us. In the present stage of the Church's history, those will become holy who are no less but more serious about what they are doing than the children of this world, who are ever so wise in their search for earthly success and the pursuit of worldly gain. Thanks again for listening. I really tried your patience.